Cloud Cover. I'm Chris Reisner. I'll be your host today. With me is my guest, Abhishek Lal. Abhishek, would you like to tell everyone a little bit about what you do and what you're going to talk about today?
Absolutely. I'm Abhishek Lal. I'm a program manager with Windows Azure. I work specifically on Service Bus and all the messaging services. And I'm excited to be here today to show you some cool gadgets, a Raspberry Pi, sending some messages to Service Bus, and really cover in terms of what we've been up to in the last few months and give you an overview of that.
Great. Well, I'm really excited to hear about that. First, before we get into the main stuff, we'll go over some of the news. So the first piece of news is that just this week we announced that we GA'd the release of HD Insight. So Hadoop in Windows Azure is now generally available. You can go ahead and use it. It's ready to go. The next bit is the release of the Windows Azure 2.2 SDK with a lot of really great stuff and a lot of integration with Visual Studio. So Visual Studio 2013 support is now there. There's also integrated login with or sign-in within Visual Studio. So before you had to do certificates and stuff like that, now you can just connect to your subscription, enter your username and password, and it'll handle pulling down and recognizing your whole Windows Azure account.
That's really awesome.
Yeah, it's really great stuff. You're also able to filter subscriptions just like you can do in the portal. So also the 2.2 SDK, you now get the ability to remote debug cloud services within Visual Studio. A really handy feature if you're working with cloud services, really great stuff. If we go down, there's also firewall management support with SQL databases. So when you create a SQL database within Windows Azure, we lock it down so you can't just access it from any computer. Well, now you can actually edit the firewall, or you can get access via or add firewall rules rather to your SQL database right from Visual Studio. So really great stuff. There's also the Visual Studio 2013 RTM VM images available for MSDN subscribers. So now you can use VM images with Visual Studio on it. And then also something we had just a few episodes ago was Brady Gasser was on talking about the Windows Azure Management Libraries. Those are officially released in preview format, so you can go ahead and grab those now. It's really great stuff. Let's see, I think we've got a little bit more down here. So we've also got some PowerShell enhancements in our new Script Center, so a lot easier access to figure out how you can do PowerShell, different things with Windows Azure, so tons of great stuff. The last bit of news for today is the second drop of the Cloud Design Patterns. So this has a lot of guidance on how to do different things with Windows Azure, tons of different best patterns and practices, and then guidance as well. So lots of really great stuff you can go through and see how to best architecture stuff in the cloud. So I think with that, we'll switch over to our main segment. Abhishek, why don't you take it away?
Absolutely. So with Azure Service Bus, I just wanted to quickly recap some of the key releases that you've already seen from us. Over the past couple of SDK releases with 1.8 and 2.0, we delivered tons of value, right from starting with the message lock renewal and batched APIs and browsing of sessions and stuff in 1.8, to in 2.0 really giving you sort of those ease of use features like on message APIs and SaaS security and auth model and stuff. So a really good set of features. That was the last time we spoke here about all the latest updates. Since then, I want to talk about what we provided. The Service Bus 1.1 preview for on-premise went out in the June timeframe. Mm-hmm. And recently on 18th of October, we've declared that RTM. So all that goodness, all that value which you had available in the cloud is now symmetrically available for you on-premise.
Great.
And you can use that. This is fully available, the SDK 2.1, the last SDK release, and you can use both in a symmetric fashion. So for today's session, I wanted to make sure that we drilled a little bit into detail about Service Bus 1.1 for Windows Server. That's the on-premise offering. As well as cover Azure SDK 2.2, which is all the new stuff for Service Bus, which is in the latest SDK release.
Sounds great.
So with that, let me start with Service Bus 1.1 for Windows Server. This is part of the Windows Azure Pack release. And Chris, if you're familiar with this, this is our on-premise offering for all the goodness in Azure, mm-hmm. so that developers and IT departments and all have a very nice symmetric experience in terms of working with on-premise and the cloud.
And the idea is to make it really easy to go between the two, right?
Correct, because customers have these needs where they might be developing in the cloud, deploying on-premise, or developing on-premise, deploying in the cloud. Or we have ISVs who want to sell their solution, which can work on the cloud or work on-premise, both of them. A lot of hybrid applications, there is a seamless boundary with what pieces are running in the cloud and what are running on-premise. And to be able to transfer your workloads as needed, you really need that symmetry.
Right, yeah.
So there's really a lot of value in there. I've got some links later to Windows Azure Pack. There's a lot of good material out there. So definitely read up on that. What I will do today is cover the service bus aspects of that. And you'll see a little bit of how all the other services show up. Other than that, we'll talk about AMQP. AMQP is our advanced messaging queuing protocol. It's a OASIS standard now, so we'll delve a little bit deeper in that. And queue, that's what sort of enables this this magic. And we'll talk about those features.
Perfect.
Windows Azure Pack is really a big foray into allowing customers the flexibility as well as the choice of where they develop, where they deploy, and where their workloads are. So as you can see in this diagram, it gives you that parallel, step-by-step layering of saying that you can have a consistent management experience mm-hmm. with the service management API. You can have a service admin experience in terms of the Azure Pack, whereas in Windows Azure, you don't manage any of the infrastructure. We do that for you, so you only have a self-service portal right. for that. Then on the layer under that is where you see Service Bus, and this is symmetric both in the cloud as well as on-premise. So the features of messaging, this is queues, topics, PubSub, all of those features are what we brought on-premise because that's where we see the real ask from customers mm-hmm. in terms of that. From a experience point of view, you can think of the service bus deployment as a dev standalone kind of scenario, and I've called out some of the steps you have there. You can see it's really, really easy with the web platform installer. Let me bring that up really quick. You can launch WebPI. You can search for service bus 1.1. And right there, you know, it's a very, very easy and experience to get your standalone setup going.
Great.
Once you've got that, you can use PowerShell to go manage different aspects of that server, or you can use the queues, topics, and stuff using Service Bus Explorer or Visual Studio or any of those tooling. That tooling with SDK 2.1 is completely symmetric. Now, with Azure Pack, you have the additional experience of what hosters can do for you, or what your IT department acting as a hoster for your HR department, for your finance department, for your sales department. It's like a hosting infrastructure where they create these deployments, and then they just give you access to a portal which says, hey, go create your service bus namespace. So this describes a little bit of that workflow, of how you would be able to have a administrator's experience, and we'll look at some of that, and how you will have a tenant experience, which is very similar to what you see in the cloud today. So without much ado, let me actually switch to these. So the first one I'll show you is the administrator's portal. So this is not something a developer would work with. This would be something an IT department folks would manage mm-hmm. so that they can create service bus instances and farms.
Right. And this looks just like the full Windows Azure portal. So absolutely. It's a very similar experience.
It's
like
completely
said.
Symmetric. It is trying to give you all the same concepts and stuff which you're going to get here so that you have that consistency which
Great.
Is there. So now in Service Bus Clouds, I can go create a new Service Bus Cloud or connect to an existing one. And here, let me drill into one of these which I already have. This is what an administrator does. They manage the number of compute nodes which are going to run service bus workloads. They'll manage the database which is going to manage the backing store for all your messages and your durable PubSub. And then they'll have the settings in terms of all the permissions and the ports and stuff which you will use. So that's the admin's experience. let me switch now to what the user's experience looks like. Mm-hmm. And right away, you'll see it's, again, not only very, very symmetric from a portal infrastructure, but it looks just like what your Azure portal does.
Definitely. It.
The same tools, the same APIs, the same experience translates here. So I can go list my queues. I can go create a new queue. You do a quick create of first queue. And here you can see right there it was gone and created. And this is now happening on-premise on your infrastructure, just as the same way yesterday you go create a queue in Azure.
That's great. You know, the developer doesn't even have to go to the administrator to get this done. They just go here and do it.
Absolutely. All the layers have been thought out in the right way so that the developers can be productive, go do their work. They can go monitor their queue, see what all the details are, the size are, and stuff like that. As well as the administrator is the one who has to go and manage the databases and the compute nodes. So really a terrific opportunity. I've got a lot of links included in the PPT, which we'll share out after that. So I encourage folks to go read more.
And we'll also put the links at the bottom. So under the video, you'll be able to see those.
Perfect. That's great. So the next thing I wanted to touch upon is AMQP. If you're familiar with AMQP, we started this effort ways back. In terms of getting our standards approved, which really, really enabled cross-platform applications, as well as built using brokers, libraries, and frameworks that were vendor independent. So we heard again and again from customers that they don't want vendor lock-in, where today if they choose a particular message broker, all the APIs are unique, all the protocols, frameworks they use are unique, and now they're just stuck in terms of that particular vendor. With AMQP, you really have no risk of that sort. The kinds of business scenarios is it enables is terrific, but more than that are the kind of application scenarios it enables. Because now, really across vendors and applications, you can have a true messaging, which can integrate applications, which can create good communication lines, and not have to worry about locked into custom protocols.
Great.
There are key features of AMQP. It's very efficient. It's a reliable data transfer protocol. So different from your general WebSockets kind of scenarios and things like that. Mm-hmm. It actually gives you durability. You can use it in both modes. You can say that you're not doing a full reliability, and then you can get sort of a little bit more throughput and asynchronous behavior. But it supports both. So fire and forget, as well as exactly once delivery, is supported.
Great.
It is portable data representation. So this is really a key value. Like, think of an existing application you have today with Service Bus, just as an assumption. You might be using our .NET client API. You might be using the REST API. You're sending messages in. Now you can create a receiver with AMQP to those same queues and topics and have full AMQP compatible messages come out. So really a very, very easy extensibility scenario of being able to go plug in those messages into other applications or other brokers or other current platforms which you have, and still be able to keep your current investments of all the messaging which you're doing. So very, very valuable. The one other thing about AMQP is that it's a fairly flexible protocol. You can actually use it for client to client as well as broker to broker topologies in addition to the client to broker. So that's a pretty good design principle, which the folks kept
quite capable
in that. And finally, it's a broker-independent model, so that's really good. From a standardization perspective, October 2012, so almost a year ago, was when OASIS ratified, and this was a culmination of a lot of effort from folks. The big companies listed here, Microsoft was just one of the participants. You can see we've got technology firms in here. We've got financial firms in here, Bank of America, JP Morgan, and all of them, because these are the big customers for messaging systems, and these are the challenges which they were trying to solve with AMQP.
Makes sense.
Service Bus has full AMQP 1.0 support. This is in GA in the cloud, as well as with Service Bus 1.1 on-premise. So whichever option you choose, whether you're deploying Service Bus on-premise or using Azure Service Bus, you have AMQP 1.0 support for that.
Right.
This is just a key customer story I wanted to share with folks. The United States Customs Border Protection is one of the biggest customers for messaging. And their CTO said that they're really enthusiastically supporting the standard in that any vendor they would buy messaging from has to support the standard.
Sure.
It's a good validation from customers for this. So from protocols and APIs perspective, you have seen this chart before. This is a fairly old chart which just shows you that service bus is this sort of omni-channel bus, right, which lets you connect from all these different APIs, libraries, we've got protocols and everything. I want to show you the evolution of this, of what AMQP has delivered for that. So if you put service bus queues and topics as a center and you look at Windows and sort of non-Windows and other platforms, now you all, in addition to all the existing libraries which you had, which was we had Java, Node, PHP, Ruby, all of them available using HTTP protocols from Windows platforms, to a lot of non-Windows platforms like Linux, Raspberry Pi, you know, all of those kinds of platforms using the Apache Cupid libraries.
Mm-hmm.
These are fully open source libraries. They just support AMQP 1.0 standard, and you can just pick them, the latest drop from there, and start using it against Service Bus because we support that protocol in there. So really now, whether you're a C programmer, a PHP, Python, or Java programmer with just JMS API experience, it doesn't matter whether you're running that JMS application on a Linux box. If you're running it on a Windows box, you can just pick up the AMQP library, program against JMS, and get all your messaging applications.
Great. So we're even giving developers even more options because they can develop almost in whatever they want and be able to use AMQP with Service Bus.
Absolutely, absolutely. So a lot of value delivered there. So as a demo, today I want to show you, I've got a little bit of some gadgetry here, which
it
is
a like
Raspberry Pi device. And what I'm doing with it is essentially I've got it sending me service bus messages every time it stops and starts.
Okay.
So you can think of scenarios where, you know, for example, if I've got a controller running somewhere which is monitoring, say, my home automation, and I want to know when the controller is unavailable or it has gone down, I could have a scenario
sure.
like that in there. Now, this is running just a Linux distribution. I'm logged in here using PuTTY. Let me just quickly show you what I have here. So here I have the Cupid Proton 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the library which I'm using. And I've actually built it right here on this box. I would not recommend that. Use a proper Linux VM. Use IaaS VMs. Do your development there.
Sure.
Just bring the binaries over to the Pi. It's not a very powerful machine as you might expect. And here I've got a simple sample which is shipped right with the library. And let me show you what it's doing. I'm going to call in the examples. Let me zoom in here a little bit.
Great.
I'm going to call in the examples folder a send message,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to give it an AMQP. First, you see the owner and the credential,
mm-hmm.
and then it just uses my service bus namespace, the Abilal test namespace service bus net, and IoT is the name of a queue which I've created there.
Okay.
And there I'm sending a message, hello. So if I hit enter here, I got the directory path. There we go.
All right.
A hello message
Great.
Should be sent. And to test that, to see if this is actually working as expected, let me bring up Visual Studio 2013. So as we said, with the SDK 2.2 release, mm-hmm. which just went out, we have Visual Studio 2013 support.
Yep.
I'm logged in here with my credentials. So note all my namespaces are listed. They're all already connected. And here is the IoT queue which I talked about. Mm-hmm. If I go refresh it now, I see there are two messages,
okay.
you know, which are waiting for me here. I can quickly go retrieve those messages. Let me open a console app, which I have, and quickly show you guys. All the console app is saying is it's going to look for messages.
Mm-hmm.
Note it uses the same namespace, mm-hmm. which I had. And then it connects to the IoT queue, which is the queue name which I've provided.
Great.
And all it does is it waits and listens for messages. So if I hit F5 here at this point, I see the two messages. One is the hello from Raspberry. This is the message which is sent every time it is switched on.
Yep.
And then the test message hello, which I just sent.
Okay.
So if I quickly switch to my terminal server, I can go there and say, hey, we are live. Send that message. And oops, of course I need some quotes here. And we'll be able to see great. Those messages are showing up
very fast
from my very low latency end-to-end. And this is a Windows, you know, Visual Studio console app, mm-hmm. which I'm pulling the messages from and sending them right from the Pi device great. Right here. So it's
very
awesome.
Cool.
Now, just to show you in terms of how the scenario works, I can go to my Pi and I can do, hey, why don't you do a reboot? So this is the restart sequence
okay.
which it goes through. So it says the system's shutting down, and the way I have it set up is I've got a simple script which will send a hello and a goodbye message
okay.
every time the machine goes down and comes back up
okay.
again.
So in just a second we should see a goodbye, and
right.
then once it reboots
so
we'll see a hello?
Right now we see the goodbye,
goodbye
from the Raspberry,
Raspberry
Pi. The machine's gone. I'm sure my connection should be disconnected at this point. Yeah.
There we go.
There we go. So it says the machine's gone away, it's in la-la land, and then when the machine comes back, I should then see a hello message, and I know the machine's ready and up to go. It gives me the IP address. I can go log in, and I'm ready and good to go again.
Very
so,
handy.
So really, really shows you the power. And now with the Apache Cupid libraries, as well as a bunch of other libraries, you have lots and lots of app options and platforms which you can use, and you can go connect and use Service Bus.
Very
from.
Cool.
From SDK 2.2 perspective, we already showed you a little bit of the Visual Studio support.
Yep.
The one other thing I want to talk about was partitioned queues and topics. This is a very, very key feature which we have released as part of Service Bus, and I want to delve into a little bit of details
great.
About what's going on there. Now, the key customer asks, which we call out on the left, are, you know, we need higher throughput, I want larger queues and topics, hey, I want to increase the availability of my entities,
mm-hmm.
right? Like sometimes for availability, you're creating 5 or 10 queues
mm-hmm.
so that you get much more throughput and availability in there. Partition entities do all of that for you. So you just create a single queue, and we will go and make sure it's partitioned underneath for you. The same thing happens in terms of topics and subscriptions. We do that for you. What this gives you is really spreading messages across a bunch of compute and storage nodes.
Mm-hmm.
So higher throughput, higher storage, higher availability.
Great.
All of that. So frankly, if you wanted to take one message away, I would say for all intensive purposes, use partition entities all the time. We give you 100 entities per namespace, fairly good number. If you need more, you should reach out to us. We can discuss more. But really, it gives you 16 GB to 80 GB worth, you know, kinds of space.
Quite a lot.
That's a lot. We've gone from 1 GB and 5 GB as the two windows to now 16 and 80
so
GB.
That's huge.
So really, really a big improvement there. And all your programming and everything remains very, very symmetric. You know, it's the same APIs, your same application can work. You cannot take an existing queue or topic and make it a partitioned one. You have to create
so
a different one.
So you'd have to migrate if you had an existing one.
Correct. So if you had an existing one, you'll have to sort of replace the URI for that. But the programming API and model is the same. So there's no change there. If you look a little bit under the covers, I wanted to talk about how to think about what are the reasons why I might not think about partition entities or just understand them better. One of the key things is just ordering, right? When you put messages in a queue, you want them to go first in and first out. Now, with partitioned, any kind of compute and storage, you can imagine ordering is not guaranteed mm. because you could be hitting different partitions.
Sure.
So sessions has always been a key concept for Service Bus, where we've allowed you to have a session be your way of not only grouping messages together, but enforcing strict sequencing, as well as maintaining session state and all of that for processing your messages. Those are absolutely 100% supported with partition entities. So if you're using sessions, you should be absolutely safe in terms of moving from regular entities to partition entities. Your apps will work exactly as expected.
Perfect.
No issues there. The other part is the partition key. So this is for scenarios where you're using transactions. You know, Service Bus today offers you very good transaction scope and features where you can take a receive command and a complete command and, you know, put them in a transaction scope so that, you know, all of that happens in one transaction or gets abandoned in one transaction. And we allow you the same with partition entities, except that now you do need messages in the same partition for the transaction scope to work, because otherwise managing transaction across partitions is not an easy job. So the only gotcha there is if you're using transactions, think about starting to set the partition key property. It's just a property on a message to something like the transaction ID.
Okay.
And you're set at that point. Because what we will make sure is if you set the partition key, we'll make sure all those messages for the same transaction go to the same partition and your transactions will work as expected.
Great.
Really cool. And then finally, there's the message ID property. If you're already using message ID for deduplication, works as is. No difference, no issues at all. From a partition availability perspective, we will hash just on the message ID. So now we will send all messages with the same ID hash value to the same partition. So deduplication just works. So really simple and straightforward. Good in that way. So that's a little bit more, you know, deeper dive under the covers of what things are. But do go check out partition entities. It's a terrific new feature add. And especially now when you see all these device scenarios, right, where you have, you know, these small home automation systems or you have connected cars and things like that, this kind of a much larger ingress topic or queue or something are things customers need. And we are working diligently to deliver that particular value to them. So as part of that, this is a key feature add. I have a bunch of links to resources. They talk about not only Service Bus overview and documentation, but all the new features I talked about in SDK, as well as Service Bus 1.1 for server. We'll include these links.
Yes, we definitely will.
So you can take a look at those, as well as you know, you have our email address or on Twitter. So should do the
What's the Twitter handle for you guys?
Mine is Abhishek R. Lal. And now you can reach me on that.
Great.
Because I'm going to give you our Twitter.
Are you all set then?
We're
done? All right. Well, yeah, absolutely. So first of all, thanks, Abhishek, for showing us. This has been some really great stuff. The Raspberry Pi is a really very, very cool demo and, you know, awesome that it worked.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, and thanks to everybody for watching. As always, you can follow us on Cloud Cover Show. And then, you know, please follow us on Facebook. And thanks again.
Thank you.